Welcome, everybody, to our weekly David Samson show. We actually have some baseball games to talk about. I want to get into some of the tactics that we saw that are controversial, at least for Yankee Nation. But, David, I want to open up with what Andy Slater reported from Bogota, Colombia. I love the geotag on the Twitter feed, Andy. Basically, this was something that was around for 2 weeks during that now infamous Ron DeSantis news dump press conference where we just announced we were the Wild Wild West. He effectively gave the entire state of Florida and all of its professional sports teams and college teams, basically any large public gathering centered around sports, the ability to go full bore and let in max occupancy for these games. In the weeks that followed, the Miami Dolphins followed CDC recommendations and capped Hard Rock Stadium at 13,000. But yesterday comes the Andy Slater tweet, which really opened everybody's eyes to what Ron DeSantis actually meant 2 weeks ago. And it sort of put out there, hey, the Miami Dolphins are now cleared to have 65,000 people during a global pandemic at Hard Rock Stadium. The Miami Dolphins were reached out for comment. They said they will continue to follow CDC recommendations and cap attendees at 13,000. David, what is your opinion? Because this seems wholly irresponsible by the governor. What I want to credit the Miami Dolphins for doing the right thing. What is just your general take on this highly controversial ruling or order from the governor?
Well, we're about to get political, I guess. So you asked. I don't think there's anything at all controversial about the ruling. When you look at the difference between Republicans and Democrats, there are many, but the macro difference is that Republicans tend to want less government intervention and more local rules, more local decisions, more pro-business. So this is an extremely political decision. But that doesn't mean that the Dolphins are then going to have 65,000 people. All he's saying is that I want to make government not in your pocket. I want to say you do what you think is right. You've got permission to have 65,000 people. It's now up to you how many you have. And that's the general rule for the Republicans. They want less federal government and more state government. So what the governor is doing is acting very much like the federal government, a Republican in the federal government, saying, hey, less of me, more of you locally. And he's done this throughout the pandemic where he said, hey, every single mayor can make his own or her own decision or their own decision about what they want to do. But from our standpoint here in Tallahassee, you know, it's as you wish. So I wasn't surprised by DeSantis's ruling at all. I was slightly a little surprised at the Dolphins' decision, because when you have a chance at a money grab like that, where other teams do not, it's interesting that you choose not to take it, but it shows that they are choosing science over money, or the NFL has gotten involved and said, listen, no matter what the state rules are, you have got to abide by NFL guidelines, which is we're really going to follow CDC.
And given what's going on in the NFL right now, which we're about to get into, I'm sure the NFL doesn't want the optics of the Miami Dolphins essentially holding a super spreader event at one of their games, even though that's an individual decision made by an individual team and an individual state government that still reflects poorly on the NFL. Speaking of reflecting poorly on the NFL, one of my problems with what Major League Baseball did, and they kind of got lucky, was when they had the outbreaks of the Marlins and the Cardinals, the two highest profile cases of that, they just kicked the can down the road and said, we'll make the games up. And baseball has a sport that can lend itself to making up a lot of games in a short period of time, because that sport can play doubleheaders. You can't do that with football. But we always ask the question, well, what happens if this happens again? Shoulder shrug, who knows, we'll see, hopefully it doesn't. It didn't happen again in Major League Baseball. The NFL has a calendar that has a Super Bowl locked in. Now, I'm trying to get down to the bottom as to how long these Tampa hotel rooms are booked, and to see exactly how much flexibility the NFL has, say if they were to delay the entire season by even a week We know now with what's happened with the Tennessee Titans, they can delay it. They can reschedule one game because built into the schedule, teams have bye weeks. But now, Tennessee is still having players test positives. They are still not allowed into their facility. You are running out of bye weeks. There is a bye week built into the postseason that I guess it could eliminate leading into the Super Bowl. What do you make of what's happening right now in the NFL?
I think the NFL is doing it exactly right because you have to have flexibility to change schedules around. And that's what MLB showed. NFL watched all the other sports, right? They were the last to act because they were. It was during the offseason when the pandemic started. So they were sort of watching what the NBA did and realized that a bubble doesn't work. And then they were seeing what MLB did when outbreaks happened. And they started watching when the first Marlins outbreak happened. As you recall, the Marlins played a game the day after a bunch of positive tests. And then MLB realized, well, that didn't work because there's a full team outbreak. So they shut down the Marlins. Then they knew what to do when the Cardinals outbreak happened, and it made it much easier. Then MLB started rescheduling. They rescheduled opponents. They rescheduled days of game. And forget the doubleheaders, because you're right, NFL can't do that. But the NFL is going down that same road. When they have to reschedule games, they're going to start by moving around the weeks that the teams are playing, trying to keep the teams playing the same teams under the original schedule. That's the first step. If that doesn't work after a while, because more teams have outbreaks or more teams have to lose a Sunday, then they'll start moving around which teams play which teams. That's the next step. Then the next thing is you take away a team's bye week. Because if the bye week is used for outbreak, that's fine. But there's a second bye week, and there is, because you can create a week 18 by getting rid of the week in between the AFC, NFC Championship and the Super Bowl. So then they've got that built in. If they need that week as well, then you're going to see the possibility of a 15-game season, because the last thing they want to do is move the Super Bowl. There is so much invested by the network, and it's CBS's game this year, to have it at that day, at that moment. So much work has gone in Tampa to have it that weekend. It's not so easy to move it. A World Series game with no fans, in theory, you can play it anytime and pick a stadium and just do it. Much different for a Super Bowl, even if there are no fans because of the broadcast issues. So your question is, would the NFL ever get to the point where they would delay the season? There was a rumor saying, hey, let's shut down for a week. Never going to happen, because what they learned from MLB is the show can go on. You've got to make sure players take care of the protocols. Like what happened with the Raiders. Do you remember that party that Derek Carr went to?
And yeah, it was Darren Waller's indoor party that broke all sorts of protocol. By the way, it turns out that the Tennessee Titans are now facing reportedly a monumental punishment for breaking protocol because players gathered together for a workout that was unsanctioned.
Well, that's even a separate story, because what that is showing you is that in baseball, we learned the players can be in a hotel, put a ball in a sock and pitch into a sock, or put up a mattress and throw a ball into a mattress, or do wind sprints up and down the hallway. Football, you actually need game preparation. You need to be together as you game plan, and you need to know what team you're playing. Frankly, a baseball team, you could tell the Yankees during the regular season that they're going to play the Orioles tomorrow and they'll go play, or you could call them up that morning and say, we had a change. You're actually now playing the Blue Jays that day. And that's no problem. Football doesn't work that way because you game plan for a specific team and you need a few days of practice to put in a game plan, and it changes every week. So what the Titans realized is that they had to do a captain's practice, I guess is what you'd call it. But you know, it's funny, the owner claiming she had no idea and the GM claiming no idea. It's complete horse hockey, right? Of course, there's no way your team is getting together and practicing without you knowing it. We'd always know if the Marlins were going to do a practice at FIU or something. No matter what the players are doing, you're aware of it. But it shows that the Titans need those days of work in order to play this Sunday. They haven't been able to practice, and that's a problem for them. My view is if the Titans can't start practicing by today, then I don't know how they play Sunday. I don't know that it's safe. And Ryan Tannehill said that, actually, that he just doesn't think it's physically safe. Whereas in baseball, you could sit for 5 days and then go play. You may be rusty. You may get a little sore, but it's not like football.
Got a lot of stuff I want to get into, but you threw out the possibility of a 15-game season. And I'm sure networks would have all sorts of questions. These are massive TV deals that the NFL has signed with several media partners. Those are fewer weeks of games, which means no ratings for those games, which means lost revenue in ad sales. If they go to a 15-game season, if they get to the point where these outbreaks are so bad we have to start eliminating games, you're going to have a lot of angry television partners. Do you see maybe the NFL making it up somehow with an additional playoff game? I'm not exactly sure how these networks can make up that lost revenue, and is the NFL on the hook to pay back some of that lost revenue?
No, you have something in these contracts. It's called the make good provision. When you don't make enough games available to your network partners, either locally or nationally, you have an opportunity to make good. So that could be an extra game that they get the following season. Maybe a game that was supposed to be on NFL Network. They'll take games off NFL Network, give it back to the broadcast partners. Maybe they'll do expanded playoffs in future years. You just don't know. When I say that there could be a 15-game season, that's not with what's happening now. When you've got a team like the Titans with an outbreak or a team like the Patriots with one or two or three cases and no more, the games will go on. I'm talking about if you've got a majority of teams who are shut down, instead of canceling the season, you may just wait for all those teams to get better and then you won't be able to get 16 games in. But I cannot see a situation where nobody plays 16 games. I'm talking about a team not playing 16 games the way the Cardinals didn't play 60. And then the question is, do you do playoffs based on winning percentage, or do you hope it's just a crappy team that can't play 16 games? You just have to wait to see what happens. The NFL has to do something that they never do. They've got to be flexible and they've got to be willing to do things differently. MLB has been pretty malleable, no doubt about it. Certainly the NBA and NHL entered that bubble and changed everything. MLS did the same by creating the tournament up in Orlando to getting games played. NFL, what have they changed exactly other than, wait a minute, no, I can't think of anything. What have they done differently because of COVID other than just saying no fans? But in terms of the actual game, the first thing they had to change was their schedule guys actually had to work and figure out how to maneuver the Titans and the Steelers and the Vikings in bye weeks. But that's about it.
The Marlins example that you mentioned previously, where they were still somehow allowed to play a game against the Phillies, and that almost brought the MLB season down. It felt like it was hanging by a thread at that point out of fear that there was going to be more of this and what happens if the Phillies got it. A similar thing might have happened Monday night with Stephon Gilmore. It was reported he actually went to dinner with Cam Newton, who the very next day tested positive for coronavirus. So Stephon Gilmore, in the days that follow the game, tests positive. So there's an incubation period for the virus. But we're still understanding how this spreads. Obviously, it doesn't take a genius to assume that he got it from Cam Newton at that dinner. And that virus had an incubation period, presumably with Cam Newton. He was able to transfer it to Stephon Gilmore before he tested positive. Now, Stephon Gilmore was allowed to play an entire game. And you got to imagine the New England Patriots and the NFL knew about this. As soon as they start investigating the positive and start doing the contact tracing, how was Stephon Gilmore, who was with Cam Newton at dinner for an extended period of time, presumably indoors, allowed to play in this game? Because now I got screen caps of him going up to the league's most important player in Patrick Mahomes, who already has to deal with a backup quarterback in his own quarterback room having the coronavirus. We're all on Patrick Mahomes' watch right now as we still try to understand how this virus is transferred. How was Gilmore allowed to play?
Well, I'm not sure why you say we're still trying to understand. I think it's pretty clear. You have to wear a mask. You have to not be indoors without a mask for an extended period of time within 6 feet. We know so much more about the virus than we did when the Marlins started testing positive. That was back in July. There's been a huge amount of information, including the absolute scientific certainty of how you are your most contagious likely before you test positive, which is why wearing a mask. Remember in the beginning, it was wearing a mask to protect from others, right? Now it's wearing a mask to protect yourself and to protect others. There was a question about when you're contagious, when it goes away. And we have more answers now, Mike. So You also mentioned that the NFL knew that Stephon Gilmore was at dinner with Cam Newton. I'm not sure how the NFL would know that. We don't know what the players are doing until MLB put guards in the lobby of the hotels when teams were on the road. Then you know.
Well, I'm assuming that. Here's why I'm assuming that. There was a plane that left Providence and a plane that left Boston the day of the game, headed to Kansas City. One plane full of players that had contact with Cam Newton. One plane of players that didn't have contact with Cam Newton. They're interviewing their team, finding out. Some of it's common sense who had contact with Cam Newton. But they have to go, you got to imagine, when your most important player at the most important position tests positive, you have to get to the bottom of whether or not you're going to have an outbreak. Is this the start of something bigger? I have to imagine Stephon Gilmore either himself reaches out to the team saying, hey, for the safety of others, I was at dinner with Cam. You got to imagine he took it upon himself. And if he didn't, you got to imagine the team, as part of these protocols, even though it's very closely guarded, was reaching out to every individual player, seeing what sort of contact they had with Cam Newton.
So contact tracing is obviously only as good as the people who you contact and whether or not they're willing or able
their
to
honesty.
Be traced.
Right.
Right. So again, as an executive, I've spoken to a bunch of executives in baseball about this whole contact tracing bit. It doesn't work. And I'm not trying to cast a pall over contact tracing. It's important. But at the same time, it's only as good as the information that you're getting from the people you're contacting to see where they've been. That's why the assumption is if you follow protocols laid out by the CDC, and you're careful and smart, then you have a chance to get a season in and stay healthy. It's why baseball, all of a sudden, after Clevinger and Plesac of the Cleveland Indians went out and partied or did whatever they did or went to someone's house, whatever they did, and the players themselves on that team said, hey, you're potentially screwing all of us and the rest of baseball and the industry. Stay in your room. All of a sudden, everybody was behaving and there were no more positive tests. And the NFL's not in a bubble, so it's not like the NBA. But the NFL has got to follow and do what MLB did. If these players want to get to a Super Bowl, there have to be rules in place on the road, which is just Saturday night. There's one night that you're on the road in the NFL, and that's it. You're in your hotel, period. But when you're at home, you are in your home, period. You do not go out. For this season, you've got to make sacrifices. And if we find, or if they find more and more players not doing it, the NFL sent out that memo. Fines up to and including a forfeiture, which, by the way, is never going to happen. The NFL will never force a 2-0 forfeit on any team, but they will do substantial fines. I thought after the $250,000 that Goodell fined teams and the $100,000 that he fined coaches like Gruden for having his face mask below his chin, I figured the owners would go up to the coaches and say, wear your damn mask. But I'm still seeing coaches where it comes off and now players who are violating. I think that Goodell's going to fine the Titans significant amount of money, including for having that practice, hoping that will then force the teams to follow what will certainly be stricter protocols.
Were the New England Patriots better off having an outbreak? Maybe not to the scale of Tennessee that's now bled into a second week here, but when you look at it on its surface, at the time that the game was decided between the Steelers and Titans to be moved, they had something in the neighborhood of 11, 12 positives, so their game gets up and canceled. And you don't have the full details as to who these exact players are, but New England has its best player on offense at the most important position, quarterback. The drop-off, as we saw on Monday night, between Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer was massive. They still have to go out and play because at the time they were limited to one positive result. And now, Stephon Gilmore, the reigning defensive player of the year, has it. So arguably, New England's two best players are the only positives, as I think there's a practice squatter as well named Bill Murray.
Bill Murray.
Yeah, I freaked out a little bit when I saw Bill Murray had tested positive for coronavirus. It's limited to these two players, so they still carry a roster that's substantive enough to actually play these games. They're probably looking around at Tennessee envious of the fact, well, you got your games canceled. Meanwhile, we got saddled with more impactful positives.
I'm going to give you a chance to take it back, what you're saying, and here's why. Are you saying it can't be that you think that a team is better off by having more players contract COVID-19?
I'm saying on the surface, it seems as though, and I absolutely, built into the construct is they have Tennessee Titans haven't been at their facility in a week and a half. That obviously will have an impact on this upcoming game if they actually play it. But without knowing
human life, though, Mike, what are you talking about?
I understand, but it seems as though Tennessee benefited just from a wins and losses standpoint by having more positives at the time than the one positive that New England got.
I'm certainly not going to quibble with you saying from a one loss standpoint, but let's start by saying no one's better off having COVID, because even if you're symptom free, we don't know yet what the long-term impacts are because it hasn't been a long term. And athletes require their lungs. You don't know what the long term is going to be. It's like when football used to be played with nary a face mask, or people would be a goalie in the NHL wearing no helmet. We learn things as we go and we make adjustments. What we know is that it's better to not have COVID than to have COVID. That's number one. Number two, look what MLB did. They had a 60-person squad and said, hey, Marlins, you better trade some players because you're playing Tuesday. You better find some guys, go to the independent league, get on the waiver wire, find some crap, and make sure you can field the team because you're playing. And the Marlins found a way to keep playing and ended up making the playoffs, by the way, when they played for 2 weeks with literally people from the California Penal League. In terms of the NFL, if I'm an owner of the Patriots and I'm Robert Kraft, I'm walking out of the strip mall and I'm calling Belichick and I'm saying, listen, do me a favor. Make sure that our guys are doing the right thing because we're going to have to play the games. And it would really suck if Tom Brady has a more successful season than we do, not because the Bucs have a better team, but because they were more disciplined than we were. You're Bill Belichick. We should be the most disciplined team. So dinners with teammates have to be done. All fraternization has to be done. And that's the bottom line. But Roger Goodell is not going to have sympathy for a team because they have to play crappy players.
But it seems as though Tennessee is afforded from just a strictly competitive balance because, yes, you went out there with the easy slam dunk argument, which is coronavirus is bad. And the more people that have it, that's worse because it can spread. I understand that. I'm just looking at it on the surface from strictly a competitive balance standpoint, because Brian Flores was quoted, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, saying, we have a plan to replace every player on our roster. We have expanded practice squads. We even have plans in place to replace head coaches. You don't need me to play the game, in essence. So with the now, even though we don't have documented protocol from the NFL, we're still learning week to week. The NFL's biggest insiders, biggest and best insiders, are still learning week to week. Now I'm left to assume the tipping point as to whether or not to cancel a game is 10, 11, 12 positives, even though we have these expanded rosters in place. And very clearly, you can play a game if your quarterback gets it, and only your quarterback gets it. So just, I have so many questions from a competitive balance standpoint, because if I'm a New England fan, I'm looking around like, man, we would have been better off having our game canceled than taking the drubbing that they were in the game to the fourth quarter, than taking an automatic L because we're starting Brian Hoyer. I wish we were Tennessee. If you're a football fan and you're looking at it strictly from competitive balance, it's a fair argument to say, well, I'd rather be Tennessee than New England.
I hear you. But if I'm talking about it from a front office standpoint, I would much rather be New England than Tennessee, because I want to have as many players available week to week as possible. And I'm angry if I'm the front office of New England. But what you're talking about, it's not just an easy argument saying you'd rather have fewer people get COVID. I'm talking about what teams are doing to make sure, because you're talking about competitive balance. The Marlins had to play with crap, which was an advantage to the teams who were playing them, but the Marlins kept winning games. So now you're saying in football, the crap football players have a far smaller chance of winning a football game than the crap baseball players do of winning a baseball
because
game.
Because the golf, my argument with what happened, if you're invoking the Marlins had what was perceived, even though they're in the playoffs right now, perceived to have a roster that wasn't that great. The wins above replacement level players wasn't perceived to be that stark. The gulf between Cam Newton and Brian Hoyer was a lot wider than the gulf between the players that Miami lost and had to replace with minor league, major league ready, in many cases, players that came into the squad.
How about when Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals, their best player, the best young player, I would argue, better than Tatis. I mean, the best.
Better than Acuna.
He is better than Acuna. He really is. He started the season, what may have been a false positive. We don't know back then, but he missed the first four, five, six games of the season. And the Nationals had a play, and their start, they started 19-31 like they did the year they won the World Series. They just didn't have time to recover. It's going to be a weird season. We know this. And football thought, because they're football and they've got this ego that is football related, that they would just go on their merry way, have a regular NFL season. You're right. There's a loss of revenue because there aren't fans, but everything's going to be fine. We'll put in a few protocols. We won't be very clear. They won't be very strict, and life will go on. What they're realizing is that COVID doesn't care that it's the NFL versus a different sport or versus the White House or versus an office. So I hope that the NFL is trying to figure out how to get stricter protocols in place, because they should be more informed given what the other leagues have done and given how much more educated we are about coronavirus. But in terms of teams and competitive balance issues or competitive disadvantage, the NFL, that is the last thing on their mind, much like it was the last thing on MLB's mind. It's actually like the government, what we were talking about. Think of the teams as the states and the league as the federal government. The federal government league said to the states' teams, hey, listen, we're playing. So if you want to play with your best players, you better make some state law that takes care of your players, because if you don't and the players get COVID, we're going to continue playing.
The NFL, probably, if you were just given what happened with Kaepernick and just their general bravado, would be voted most arrogant league, I think, by most sports fans. This seems particularly brazen, trying to pull this off. Now, they have more resources than any other league in the country. They're the national sport. But to do this without a bubble, if a league could figure out how to have a bubble with the game of football, whether it's each division has its own bubble, and we figure this out, why didn't they go bubble? Because the NFL, unlike the NBA, has to worry about, you know, maybe 125, 150 coaches, players, personnel, trainers that around these players, where the NBA, it's a lot tighter, and it plays itself a lot more to the concept of a bubble. Is it just too impossible to do a bubble with the NFL? Because what seems impossible to me is having your active roster, in because it's massive, all adhere to the COVID protocols. I would just rather take the financial hit of putting together a bubble on the NFL. I can make this happen.
Tell me, how would that work? You've got five games going at Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean you need to find five football fields in one area?
Yeah.
Let's say Orlando, right? DeSantis wanted to host the bubble.
Yeah.
So you've got someone playing at FSU, someone playing at FIU, maybe someone playing at Pro Player. So everyone's within 3 to 6 hours of bus rides. Is that what you mean, that you'd have everyone playing at once? Or are you saying, like the NBA, you'd be playing all day long? Or are you saying that you'd bubble in different cities? Because how would you get so many football games in one place?
So I tried to work this out, and I think you probably mostly have to go artificial turf, because if you have multiple games on natural turf, that screws it up. But I think I start with, okay, you have all these games against your divisional opponent already set into the schedule. We're going to open the season in bubble play, not close the season in bubble play, because this allows us to get other protocols in place, like they're doing with the MLS. They opened up, not necessarily in a bubble, out when they got done with MLS's back. They said, your schedule is limited to these regional opponents, and we'll see how that plays out, and then we'll expand the schedule maybe and add teams outside of that region. What I would put together, if I were drawing up what an NFL bubble would look like, I'd say, all right, AFC North, you're in this compound in West Virginia. It has two fields, or hell, it has one field, and it's artificial turf. You get the 1 o'clock window and the 4 o'clock window. All right. You have four teams in the division, head to head early window, head to head late window, circle back next week. We'll hammer out the next game in the division. I think you could do that. Jerry World, you have the NFC East. game in the 1 o'clock window, divisional game in the 1 o'clock window, divisional game in the 4 o'clock window. You have a handful of weeks that you knock out every single one of your divisional games. So you have a home and away against your three rivals in the division. And then you collect the data and you figure out, all right, how do we go about playing non-conference games where we have teams traveling from their home state to another?
Where are the teams staying in West Virginia, just out of curiosity?
Pro Football Talk actually threw this out there months ago when bubbles were the rage and MLB was talking about a bubble. There was a place in West Virginia that had the infrastructure to do this. There are places, obviously, in Orlando. Orlando has proven that it has the infrastructure to do this. So, really, you don't really need that many fields. You can have practice fields on campus. They threw out one in West Virginia. I personally haven't scouted exactly where these individual remote bubbles could be, but people talk about it like it's impossible, and there are plenty of facilities across the nation that can house multiple teams because there are plenty of facilities around the nation that house football camps with multiple fields.
So would the teams stay in West Virginia for the 2 weeks? Would they stay there the entire week?
They would stay there, so we would need, you have two games against each of the three. So you need to be there for 6 weeks, maybe build in a bye. You need to stay there for close to 2 months. Each
at
team
a
in a bubble.
Hotel in West Virginia.
Yeah, each of the four teams in their division okay. In this bubble.
So here's the problem. Right now, from the players union standpoint in the NFL, the NFL players spend a total of 8 nights on the road during the season. Rough guess. Eight road games. You travel Saturdays. You come back Sundays after the game. Maybe the people on the West Coast, you go the extra day, but I'm assuming roughly 8 nights. You're now telling players in the union that they're going to be on the road for 2 months straight for 60 nights. I just don't think that union, because there's only one game a week, it's different in the NBA when you're playing every other day, or an MLB bubble right now where you're playing every day. Think about it. These teams are in their bubbles in Texas and California. They took away the off days to get these games in and then get the losing team home and away out of the bubble and just get through October as quickly as possible. And the NBA really did the same thing in its bubble. NFL, to me, the reason why you don't do a bubble when you have weekly games only, it's difficult to convince your union that you're going to bubble away from family in an uncomfortable remote hotel in West Virginia when you could be at your home 6 nights a week and just behave.
Okay. Yeah, I get that. I'm just spitballing as to what this would look like. Obviously, there are all sorts of hurdles. And the NFL, unfortunately for them, is a sport that lends itself the least to a bubble, but it also makes itself the most susceptible to the virus.
And by the way, I think we also learned about the bubble. We've congratulated NBA and NHL on the bubble. But and I don't want to be negative, but I will say this, and I said this on Nothing Personal as a way to see, because I guarantee it. The NBA will not bubble its regular season in 2021. The players were miserable in the bubble. You know, they added barbers, they added pool tables, people were golfing. The players were miserable. The NHL bubble was an unmitigated disaster. They were bringing people into the bubble. They were so bored. There was so much activity going on in the NHL bubble that
they just really lucked out because they picked the right country to do it.
That never became public. But yes, the reality is these players, it took a huge mental toll. And I know they make a lot of money, and I know people don't feel sorry for them, and we want the games to go on. But I do not believe there is a single union in North American professional sports that will approve a long-term bubble for 2021, which is why we are going to see so much fighting between labor and management coming in front of us, because revenues are going to be so down. John Middleton, the owner of the Phillies, went public and said, "You want me to sign JT Realmuto? Tell me what my revenues are." And I was telling someone on a radio show I did this week, I don't remember where it was, I said, the way I gave a budget to Jeffrey is I knew what our revenue would be because I was able to budget, and I would give him a base case, a conservative case, and a best case. And then I'd say, okay, here's the payroll. Here's the break even. How much money do you want to lose? Pick a payroll and assume that we draw the worst case scenario fans because our team stinks, and that and we can't trade any players, so we have that payroll for the whole season. Make that assumption. That's the check you're going to have to write. John Middleton, who's the owner of the Phillies, if I'm the president of the Phillies, I can't even make a budget. right now because I have zero idea if there's zero fans in MLB next year or full capacity, whatever that means for a specific team.
That sport also doesn't have a salary cap in place too. So teams sort of operate by their own books anyway. So that financial information is important. The NBA is a little different. One of the things that is starting to leak out and make its way onto Twitter timelines is the concept of several bubbles as opposed to just the one in Orlando. I saw the idea of having Las Vegas be a bubble, Chicago be a bubble, Orlando once again being a bubble. So curious to find out, but it's going to be these players, unions, and owners thought that they had a deal. And this changed the world and global economics for years to come. We won't know the full impact of this, and the dust won't settle for this for years to come. So it'll be very curious to see what happens when they get back to the negotiating table. Let's talk about the Major League Baseball playoffs. And you were very honest in the last episode describing your emotions as the Marlins clinched the playoffs. Since then, the Marlins had a two-game sweep of the Chicago Cubs on ABC of all networks. Your emotions then, before we get into what's happening right now against the Atlanta Braves?
So I'm actually hoping the Marlins go win the World Series because then I can be associated again. It's going to come off selfish, but you asked me a question, I'm going to be honest, because then I can be part of a franchise where three different presidents started with Dombrowski in 97, then, and because he was the president at the time, and then me and then Jeter. And we'd have a historic franchise, never having lost a playoff series, three World Series rings. I think it would be super cool because if the Marlins lose to the Braves, which I picked the Braves to win on nothing personal, I think the Braves will win. They're up 2-0. They're not going to lose three in a row to the Marlins, although crazier things have happened. But I doubt that'll happen. The Braves are just a better team. Now we're just like everybody else. We're 6-1 as a franchise. And that's it. Once you lose a series, every time the stat comes up, best winning percentage, it's always Marlins have never lost a playoff series. And it's not like there's other teams who have never lost a playoff series because they've never been in one. It's like a stat of teams who have never lost a World Series and putting a team in there who's never been to a World Series. That's not fair. The Marlins were undefeated, and that's cool. But so I was rooting for the Marlins over the Cubs for sure because I having the Cubs be miserable makes me happy. And the Marlins were a better team than the Cubs. And now the Marlins are a team that the Cubs hate. How ironic that the big bad Cubs look at our Marlins as the team, the way, you know, Jordan looked at the Pistons.
Yeah, the thorn in the side.
Isn't that funny?
Even though it's two decades apart. It is funny. I do want to talk to you about the Braves because it does seem with yesterday's win that they are going to put this series away. Although Miami heads into game three with a distinct pitching advantage. The Braves are a really good team. Absolute mashers in that lineup. However, the rotation, it does seem to be susceptible, which is why people aren't exactly closing the door on the Miami Marlins per se. Is their pitching good enough? Because they have two good ones, even though Freed hasn't really shown that in recent history against the Marlins. But Anderson was very good for them. Why didn't this team, it sort of jumps off the screen. They should have done one of these deadline moves for one of these big arms for postseason push because it feels like they're a quality starter away.
So do you know who owns the Braves?
It's not Ted Turner. Is it? Is it still Ted Turner? Is it AOL Time Warner? Who owns the Braves now? I have no idea.
So they are corporate owned and Liberty Media. It may not be even be called Liberty Media. They are corporate owned. It is purely budget. They do not go over budget ever because they've got a stock price to worry about and they've got a situation where they don't want to be irresponsible. And they've been accused of not signing enough players, not having a big enough payroll. But they got two young players to sign long-term deals in Acuna and Albies. They have Freddie Freeman, who probably will win the MVP. They gave a year contract to Marcell Ozuna.
Is Freddie Freeman a Hall of Famer?
I'd say fringe right now. But I'm tough. I'm a no on Buster Posey. So me, the Hall of Fame is a big deal. And you need long-term bulk and sustained greatness to be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. Buster Posey's
Freddie Freeman's had, I mean, he was really good when I was watching baseball in like 2010.
He's been great for a long time. He's not a first ballot slam dunk Hall of Famer. I guess I'd have to look at his career. I don't know what his bulk is in terms of hits and home runs. I don't know what his career average is. I don't believe he's got a World Series ring. And I know you say that people say that doesn't matter, but I know he doesn't have a ring. The Braves haven't won since 95. I think that winning an MVP, I don't think he's won an MVP yet, but I could be wrong. My head is completely clogged. I don't believe Freddie Freeman has an MVP or a World Series ring. And I think that you need to be somewhere in that conversation in order to be an automatic Hall of Famer.
A future episode. I have it written down on my notes. I was thinking about it the other day while I was cooking. I was like, man, I would love to do a steroid scandal episode with David Sampson.
Those were the days.
We are absolutely going to do one of those.
Days of back knee, Mikey.
Yes, I want to do all that. Congressional hearings and Rafael Palmeiro pointed fingers. I want to get into all of that with you. In 2000, and it might have been 4 or 5, you guys had another postseason push. I think it was 2005. You guys had another postseason push, and you guys were done in by a hurricane. I felt like you had to play
multiple hurricanes that year. Do you remember? That's the year that every other week we were putting up shutters.
Yeah, and that was the year of Wilma. So it was the Astros, White Sox World Series. What year was that? The year that Ozzie won. Either way,
White Sox won in 05.
You guys, was that the year that you guys assigned David Weathers, a former original Marlin? I don't know if he was an original Marlin. He was on the early Marlins rosters, and you guys made a move to bring in. I went to a doubleheader against the Cubs, I believe, and David Weathers started one of those games. And I loved it because I loved David Weathers from when he was an original Marlin, and he came back into the squad. I want to ask you about that, and then I want to ask you if you felt your own mortality when his son made his major league debut for the Padres 2 nights ago.
I thought it was last night.
Was it? No, it wasn't last night because Kershaw got the start.
Ryan Weathers?
I'm talking about Ryan Weathers, who is the son of...
Was it 2 nights ago?
Yeah, it was 2 nights ago.
So David Weathers, he's a funny guy, actually. So you're asking about mortality. I've been watching the sons of players play for a while now. Vladimir Guerrero's son, I've known. Tatis Jr., I've known since he was a little kid. NBA referees have been reffing for 20 years, and I watched their father's referee. You know, James Capers, I watched his father, Jimmy Capers. Ron Garretson ref forever, and I watched his father, Daryl Garretson, ref. It's not about mortality. It's about not understanding the temporal nature of life and civilization. So it's impossible for me to believe that the 80s are basically 40 years ago, because for me, my life was frozen in the 80s. My musical taste was frozen in the 80s. My movie taste was informed because of the 80s. My dress, like everything, was informed because of that era, because that's when I grew up, and that's everybody's the same. And so now that I see sons playing, what I find fascinating is how important, and I was talking to Jeff Conan about this, about Griffin Conan, genetics is so interesting to me, and environment is also interesting, because there's no genetics in refereeing, right? It's like going into the family business. But in baseball, either your child has it or doesn't. So there, I was around, I'll never forget, Jim Beattie, the GM of the former Yankee GM of the Expos. He has a son, great guy, big kid. Jim Beattie was a big guy. He'd bring his son to Expos games, and his son would read books during the games. If you asked his son, hey, do you know that's Vladimir Guerrero out there playing and you should watch him? He'd say, I'm sorry, what? Is he Russian? Right. And not being racist, just being what, I don't know who that is. And I don't care who that is. And Jim Beattie had to embrace the fact that he had a son who had the genetics, had the environment, but didn't have the desire. And it's interesting to see which children of which celebrities. We were just talking about this. Andre Agassi and Steffi Graf had a kid. I think that kid is a baseball player. How can that kid not be a tennis player? It makes no sense to me. So it's not that it's my mortality. It's I can't believe how quickly time passes. And it just forces me to remember that you should carpe diem, because Robin Williams had it right in Dead Poets Society. It goes fast. And that's a Bueller quote too, Ferris, not Walker. And if you don't stop and look around and do some memorable things, you know, you're going to die and it could be tomorrow. And everyone lives by that adage, except they don't act on it until they get sick or until it's too late. And wouldn't it be really cool to live with that, live on that adage and do the things you want to do before it's too late? It's freaking hard, though, Mikey.
He might be just a generally funny guy, but is there, you describe David Weathers as a funny guy. Is there one particular moment that sticks out?
No, because he's just sort of a goofy guy. There were some players who were funny because they're smart and humorous. There's some players who are funny because they're eccentric. Luis Castillo, I wouldn't call him a smart guy. What I would call him is a caring, emotional, super funny guy who's not intentionally funny. So there's that type of guy, sort of the awkward funny guy. Then there's the guys who try to be joke funny, like the prankster funny guy. And then there's the guys who are stupid funny, who do things that you literally can't believe they're doing and you just laugh at that. David Weathers was just sort of an interesting, clever, funny guy. I mean, the opposite of like Sam Dyson, who there was just an article about him and how he is a abuser. And I was just, by the way, I don't know why I just segued to that, why I just thought of that. There's an example of a guy who I thought was just weird. And if I had known that he was violent, I would have released him on the spot. And it just shows, as I think about him and I think about even Jose, where you don't really know what people are doing off the field. And it's very frustrating looking back, knowing that I could have helped a woman not get abused because I would have dinner with Sam Dyson a lot in the clubhouse. And you just don't know what's going on off the field as much as you want to. And that's upsetting.
Didn't have the David Weathers question going there, but I think we went into an interesting place. I'd like to explore that a little bit more in a future episode. By the way, we have breaking news in the NFL. Time of recording, Diane Rossini just tweeted this. It plays into what we were discussing earlier in this episode. I'm told by the Titans and Bills players, they were told there is an option for playing their game, their Sunday game, on Monday or Tuesday in Nashville. If that happens, Thursday night's game, a massive game for Fox and their Thursday night contract between the Chiefs and the Bills, would have to be moved to Saturday. It is all being discussed. So they keep their own window, but now they're going head to head against the big college football game day. You're seeing all these networks pay the price because I'm sure ESPN, which got plenty of free promotion on the CBS early game, David, I don't know if you noticed that, because they have the lesser game all of a sudden because Patrick Mahomes is playing Bill Belichick on Monday. This is going to have shockwaves throughout all these networks because now you're messing once again with ESPN. What happened? We're supposed to own Saturday night. We have the big college football primetime game. Now we got to go up against Chiefs and Bills potentially.
So just be aware, it's exactly what we spoke about earlier in the episode. The next step in dealing with these outbreaks, mini outbreaks or positive tests, is you have to have flexible scheduling. And the reason why you keep hearing it can only be moved to a Monday or Tuesday, because that's the first best preference. Because if you play Monday, Tuesday, you can still turn around and play the next weekend. If you play Wednesday, you've screwed up the following weekend. So that's the first step. Then if they can't play Monday, Tuesday, then you do what they did with the Titans, where you then postpone the game and then work with bye weeks. Then if that doesn't work, you work with adding bye weeks. It's everything we said. They're now in step two of that rescheduling plan because of outbreak.
But when the Marlins had their outbreak, it obviously impacted some of the series that they had then. Like it definitely impacted the Phillies, but the Phillies were able to get back to business sooner than the Marlins. This Titans outbreak now has penalty. I know Ben Roethlisberger came out and said, like, we're at a disadvantage now because our bye comes earlier in the season. We could use that bye later. It's a competitive disadvantage. And now the Chiefs are affected by this. The Bills are affected by this. One team does something unsanctioned, now faces unprecedented penalty for it, and now we're up to four teams that it potentially affects.
Do you not remember how many teams in MLB were affected by the Marlins and the Cardinals outbreak? There was at some point, there were 12 out of 30 teams impacted by the outbreak of two teams. That's just how it goes. And NFL knew this was going to happen, but they were too arrogant to realize it, and maybe the union did not prepare its players for it. I know that the players union in MLB, the minute the Marlins outbreak started, one of the first communications to the entire membership was, get ready, because if you think you're playing X team on X day in X city at X time, you got to be ready to go against any team, any day, anytime. And the NFL players better get on board with that fact. They're going to be playing different teams at different days, at different times, in different cities. They could end up moving. If all of a sudden New York, Florida becomes a hotspot again, or maybe it still is, and all of a sudden, well, that's a bad example because no one politically in Florida will ever let the Dolphins not play in Miami. Take another state. Let's say New York becomes a hotspot again, and the Giants and Jets can't play. Well, I guess in that case, they could just cancel those games because who cares about those teams because they're 0-32. Pick another place. It's possible you could switch from playing a Kansas City-New England game. It's supposed to be in New England. It gets played in Kansas City. That's just how 2020 is going to be, and it's time for people to embrace it. If we went to breaking news every time there's a tweet or something from the NFL about a schedule change, you're in perpetual breaking news because that's what's coming.
Let's get to this Yankees topic that I wanted to get into, but very briefly because we're running out of time here. Controversy surrounds this decision by Aaron Boone to start the game with an opener and then get to J.A. Happ in a spot that he is not used to. He is a starter, and he comes in, joins the game, and now it seems as though that really turned the series. What did you make of the controversial decision made by Aaron Boone?
Well, J.A. Happ stinks. Let's start with that. So having him, knowing that he's he's one of those players who likes routine, and he likes knowing when he's going to pitch. And when you're a starter, you get to know at what time you're going to pitch because there's a game time. And coming in the second inning as a lefty, thinking that he had outsmarted the Rays, who are a better team anyway. Listen, Stanton's on one of his roles that we saw in Miami. You can't let Stanton beat you. And he didn't beat him, even though he hit a home run last night. It was a meaningless home run, you know, changing the final score. Who cares? The night before, he kept them in the game, even though they lost. The night before, he won the game for them. So he's now the player that you don't want to let beat you. But the Yankees tried to be the Rays. The reason that teams do openers and then turn over the bullpen is that they don't really have starters. And the Yankees had a starter for game two. They could have gone Garcia all the way. They could have gone Happ all the way, but I wouldn't have. They could have gone Tanaka all the way in game two instead of game three last night. But they, for some reason, Cashman thought that he would do his best Rays imitation. But that's not why they're going to lose the series. They're losing the series because the Rays are a better team than the Yankees. And that's just the fact. They were the better team all season. They were the better team preseason. They were the better team against the Yankees during the season. And that's why that's happening.
Let's get to your review for the week. Every week, David Samson, unless we forget about it, reviews either a movie or a TV series. What's on the docket this week?
So I was watching the debate last night, and I then was watching the Dodgers-Padres, and then I was watching my eyelids closed, but I was watching them being closed. So I decided to go back and watch a movie that I had seen a long time ago. And part of the debate was about climate change. And I watched an Inconvenient sequel, which is the part two movie to An Inconvenient Truth. And I started thinking about documentaries that are political in nature, you know, Michael Moore documentaries, Albert Gore documentaries, any documentary that's done in terms of climate change or in terms of gun control or any of those issues. Of course, they're going to be political in nature. And I started thinking about our responsibility as a individual, not as a country, not as a world, but what's our responsibility when we throw out plastic, when we do things that we know waste energy? And it's really hard to deal with a problem that seems so far in the future or that seems so difficult to conquer that you feel helpless against it. It's like trying to solve world peace or trying to solve world hunger. You can't do it all at once. You can only do your part. So I was watching an Inconvenient sequel, and I was thinking that the way it works is that if you start making the difference that you want to make, then there's a chance. But if we're all selfish the way human beings are, at some point, the price gets paid. People don't understand what the trade deficit means or what our deficit means as a country because it doesn't impact us ever during the course of our life. Yeah, we've got a $3 trillion deficit instead of two. Well, what does that mean for me? Nothing. Maybe for my kids, nothing. Maybe in 100 years, our country goes bankrupt. Well, countries go bankrupt all the time. They'll just borrow more money. So it's hard to get behind deficit reduction. Climate change is something. There is a real chance that our Earth, where we live, will not be able to sustain itself and will disappear. Not my lifetime, I hope, because I'm selfish. My kids' lifetime, I hope not. But five generations from now, I don't care because I don't know them. So it's hard. And I'm saying not as myself. I'm saying that's how people are. That's the human nature. So I was watching a documentary called An Inconvenient Sequel. There are ways and little things we can do, but I have no feeling, Mikey, that anyone's ever going to do any of these things because there is no immediate threat. And people don't tend to change until there's an immediate threat. And at that point, it's too late.
Speaks to a lot of what's going on right now. Just a different problem. David, I am dangerously close to making another official recommendation. I do this basically quarterly. I'm watching this HBO Max show. It's an HBO show. I'm sure you can find it on just regular HBO. I'm viewing it through HBO Max. It's called The Vow. Are you familiar with this?
I can't believe it. I've had five. I keep track on my phone of listeners of Nothing Personal when they make recommendations, and I put a number next to them because it'll inform me what I want to watch next. The Vow is in first place, and Crib Camp is in second place as my next two things to watch.
All right. So
I guess there's something going on with The Vow because I'd never heard of it until I started getting DM'd on Twitter.
So The Vow is about the NXIVM cult that operated out of Albany and then spread throughout the country. Many
of women just go to jail for that. A famous woman.
Yeah. So I didn't really know what it was. And then Christy Crook, I think that's how you pronounce her name. She was in Smallville. And I remember, during the Me Too stuff, I saw stuff shortly thereafter about how this CW star was involved in a sex cult. Now, they got a lot of footage. I mean, they recorded everything. I was stunned. There's an episode in which they're in the room with a Dalai Lama and they record the entire thing as the Dalai Lama is trying to figure out whether or not to publicly endorse what turned out to be a sex cult. It's fascinating stuff, really well made. Could have used an editor because I think I would have preferred to watch it in maybe a 2.5 hour movie as opposed to now I'm seven episodes in and I kind of am getting antsy. I'm like, okay, tell me exactly what happened. It's such a slow burn.
What's the time commitment?
It's quite hefty because each episode is close to an hour.
So and how many episodes?
I'm already on episode 7. I'm not done.
But how many are there?
I don't know yet, actually. HBO Max, it's not like Netflix where I can chart it. I mean, I can, but it's not as obvious as it is on Netflix.
Am I the only person who goes into a binge having to know what my commitment is so I can allocate it? Do you go blindly into a binge without knowing what you're getting into?
Yeah, this is a platform thing because I think Netflix is so smart in how they develop their algorithms and how every episode is sort of designed to make you want to watch the very next one. And you chart and you're like, okay, I'll knock out 3 today because I'm on episode 3 of 10. HBO Max isn't like that. You have to sort of find it a little bit more. It's not as in your face. So, but it's such a slow burn, this show, that after 2 episodes, I wanted to join the cult. Like, that's how, because it seems as though this is self-improvement. This is actually, there is actually science stuff that they're saying in terms of like pain and suffering and how your mind can just shut some of that stuff off. And there is, they call it tech, but there is something to it. I mean, the person behind it is obviously brilliant, but then things go sideways in a horrible manner. It's good, and I'm almost ready to give it the seal of approval, but I'm batting 1,000 right now on my recommendations. I've raised the bar to a degree that I don't want to full-on say, hey, Dave, you have to watch this.
Can we do one spoiler alert? Because it seems to me that in every cult, one of the main rules is that every member of the cult has to have sex with the cult leader. Like, that's a rule. So is that a rule in The Vow too?
David, you got no idea. Like, it feels like I'm on episode 7 and I'm still scratching the surface as to how crazy this is, but you don't really know it until like episode 5, until like episode 4, as to like how sex is really like one of the founding principles of this cult when it doesn't seem that way.
Of everything, by the way.
Yeah, very true.
Is the reason we do everything.
There is.
And all cults do is they're out in front, right? The cult leaders are saying, listen, we have a cult. We believe in a bunch of things. But first and foremost, you have to have sex with me.
Yeah.
That's what they all say.
It didn't seem like first and foremost. It seemed as though
this is like a back burner. It's sort of, we're going to take advantage and try to make money. But on top of that, you have to have sex with me.
Right. So there was an offshoot of the cult because they had like these programs that you could sign up. It's sort of like if you're at camp and, oh, we can like take violin lessons if you want, or we can go to the lake instead. So there are all these offshoot programs. And then several years into this cult existing, there's this like rogue secret society that is sort of posed as women empowerment. And then it basically, the end game is to just be having sex with the founder of everything. I mean,
it's too good. It's too good.
There's branding. There is like, it's just horrible stuff. So almost ready to sign off full endorsement. I'm at the precipice of it. Not quite yet, but I think I already have you intrigued that you're going to go ahead and do it anyways.
I think because it's number one on the list for listeners of Nothing Personal, I have to do it. But the fact that you're even on the fence means it's good enough that I'm going to do it. Although the problem is it seems predictable. I had no idea it was about a cult. And so I'm not thrilled because I just watched a thing on Waco and all cults are the damn same.
Yep.
So I could just watch a different sort of movie.
Oh, you saw the show on Waco? I like that. The one with Michael Shannon?
Yes.
That did a pretty good job. I saw that like 2 years ago when it was on Paramount. I was a fan of that.
That's what it was on. And so I watched it and reviewed it, but they all end the same way.
The Waco one, actually, because there were several questions old enough just to remember like what happened at Waco. And I even remember in the media, it wasn't, yes, there was this, hey, there's this crazy cult, but it was viewed more as a tragedy. And no, the government actually really screwed this one up and people were lost. And Waco really amplifies that storyline as well.
No doubt. But my point was the point of the cult in Waco and David Koresh, you had to have sex with David Koresh.
Yes.
Like that was the rule.
Right. But relatively harmless compared to, we're talking about mutilation in regards to Nexium. They up it quite a bit of notches because
right, now I'm a little interested.
Yeah, because you see the show Waco and you realize Koresh, yes, he's having sex with these people. But when you get altitude on the situation, why couldn't we just leave these people alone? Like there was a firearms and ATF had issues with them. But you realize like there was all this bloodshed and all this tragedy. When you start asking yourself the question, were we just better off leaving them alone? Which was really
hard to leave alone when you've got people who are being, that's like the Patty Hearst syndrome. When someone gets kidnapped, you can't leave them alone, even if they fall in love with their kidnapper and they're happy there. Mm-hmm. You can't leave them alone. People who get sucked into a cult will, by definition, say they're happy to be sex prisoners of the cult leader.
Yeah.
You can't leave that alone because they're being brainwashed.
I think you'll appreciate being a cinephile as you are. There is Hollywood ties to this. You start Googling Casper Van Dien, which is a name that I haven't thought about in like 20 years.
I know that name from somewhere.
He was in Starship Troopers. He was in Sleepy Hollow. Casper Van Dien.
Is he a cult leader?
No, he's not a cult leader. He was actually married to, there's this central figure in the show that is a former actress that is just trying to get her daughter back. And there's a lot of actors that are involved that maybe you have seen bit roles like, oh yeah, I recall this person's face in there. A lot of it seems as though it plays up people's narcissism and actors and Hollywood types seem to be like, you know, just prime targets for what Nexium was trying to do. So definitely check it out. All right, full endorsement. I'm there. Watch the vow. Watch the vow.
Right,
trying to keep
my I can't guarantee by next week because the MLB playoffs, every game is 4 hours, it seems to me. So when you have quadruple headers every day, I don't know that I will get a full series in. Plus, I've started watching Emily in Paris, and I can't stop because it's 29-minute episodes I'm doing in the middle of the night, and it's so bad, but I'm going to withhold my review for now.
All right.
I will get to the vow, I promise.
Well, check out David Samson's show, Nothing Personal, with David Samson. A lot of great stuff on the MLB playoffs. You're going to be doing stuff with CBS HQ, CBS Sports HQ, breaking down the playoffs. Looking forward to seeing you on that. We'll talk to you next week, David. Thank you.
All right.